That's right. Thank you, JP, for the brilliant introduction. That's perfect. Couldn't ask for better. Good morning. It's time to get after it today. We're supposed to do some good work, right? It is just about as beautiful as it can possibly be this morning on a Saturday morning. It's exactly 59 degrees. When does that happen, you know, a day or two before June? It's almost like it's not summertime, but I'll take it. This program is Health Essentials. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I had a question this week from a woman. I will not say her first name. It was Leah. Rats. I just blew it. Never mind. But she was asking a question. She was just telling me that she hasn't really considered the idea of detoxification. And so we were talking about a type of a juicing beverage that you can make, and I think this particular one that I like when, you know, someone's trying to help improve their health. Or she said specifically, what do I do to reduce inflammation? So we talked about a couple ideas that she could put into practice. And one of those involved, what about making a fresh juice for myself? I said, yeah, that would be good. And she said, well, do I make up a huge batch of it and just drink a little bit throughout the week every day? And I said, well, you know, there's a couple ways of looking at this. If you were an older person and somebody else was making this for you and you kept it in your refrigerator, yeah, that would work. But the very best, of course, I know this may sound weird what I'm fixing to tell you. When you run a green apple through a juicer, or a lemon, celery, carrot, ginger, whatever you run through the juicer, you're essentially drinking the fresh blood of the plants. I know it's not blood the same way that human blood is, but nonetheless, it is a living substance. It has enzymes in it that are active, but they don't live forever. So the idea of when you're trying to infuse this vital life force and this living energy and these living enzymes into your body, that could be very advantageous to get it while it has greatest potency. So the longer something is exposed to air and sunlight, it starts to deteriorate. Okay. Here's what I suggested to her. I said, okay. And I think she and I, we went on our phones and we got on eBay and we looked up different, you know, juicers. And I told her, I said, I would absolutely have no trouble buying a used juicer that was of high quality instead of maybe purchasing one for the same exact price. It was brand new. But the difference would be if we got something like a Champion juicer, it would actually have a powerful motor. You know, in this world, you get what you pay for, right? Right, that's correct. And so I really think what you want is you want something that's got sufficient power, because you're trying to crush and grind and rip apart the cell wall of the plant so you can liberate the liquid cellular contents or the blood of the plant. I can only imagine there's a few people that are probably cringing thinking about that concept. But you get what you pay for. So I would rather have something that has a very powerful motor, and Champion's one of those. But we looked yesterday, and we saw several that were, you know, around the $70 range. I realize that's money, but it just depends. If you want your body to stay in great working order and to serve you well, see, that would be my interpretation of you being functional and athletic and great shape today. You can tell your body that you're going to get up and put mulch in the flower beds, and you're going to pull weeds and mow the yard, and you're going to do plumbing repairs, or you're going to fix a fence. But your body has to be able to comply with that. Make your body do what needs to be done, but it helps if your body's in good working order. So for those of you that want to stay in good working order, we might want to, you know, include a few living foods every so often, and this juice concoction might be one of the ways you can do that. Well, in her situation, and I'm going to get to the research in just a moment, what if you just used one green apple, two carrots, two ribs of celery, or three, I don't care, you can use more, one lemon, and then maybe a third Actually, what I should say is maybe a quarter to a third to a half of a ginger root. And ginger roots are found in the produce section of the grocery store along the far wall. And so you could always put that. Now, that's pretty potent. I don't know if you have any experience with ginger. There are some people that are terrified by things that have a bite to them or a little bit spicy, and that definitely does. But you talk about good for the body. In the world that we're living in, you are going to encounter toxins. There is no way around that. And your health depends on being able to remove toxins or to detoxify. And there's a lot of ways to do that. One of the ways is just drinking water. If you do not drink water or sufficient amounts, you cannot dilute and wash the toxins out of you. So you have all these amazing systems within your body, and they're all working to make sure that your body's squeaky clean. Although, I would suggest to you that all of us have room for improvement. We're all in the same boat. Okay, let me share this with you right here. Since I mentioned lemons a while ago, all I want you to do is just hold this thought that maybe there's a very special component. If you want to say a phytochemical, a vitamin, a mineral, if you want to say, call it an herbal concoction, I will not argue with you. But I want to suggest to you that lemons contain a very, very special compound. Now, when you look at the lemon, I know I'm wasting your time by telling you this, but I had a steamer that I think I purchased for like $16. It was ridiculously cheap. But I said, okay, that has a specific application for me. But in the office one day, I was goofing off. I think I was waiting on a patient to arrive at the office. And so I had taken a lemon, cut the lemon in half, and then I squeezed the juice into a cup of tea, probably hibiscus or rose hips. I really like adding it to dandelion tea. I know that sounds unusual, but I don't have any problem with that. It tastes good to me. Maybe to other people it does not. So I took that lemon. I said, you know, I'm going to try the steamer out. So I put maybe, I don't know, half a pint of water, and I turned it on. Yeah, you got to remember, it's like a $16 steamer. It's not ultra high tech, but I put the lemon in there on the top shelf of the steamer, and I said, I just want to watch this and see what happens. It didn't take long until I just thought, oh my goodness, I like the smell of this. It smells so good. So I want you to consider that maybe there are components that are found in the skin and the rind of a lemon that are actually good for you. Well, there is a very particular, unique molecule called limonene. Sometimes it's known as a terpene. When I was a boy, turpentine was probably available in every household back in the 60s and 70s. And so one application of turpentine might be if you had some type of tar on your body, turpentine would probably lift that tar right off. And I'm almost positive the turpentine that we had in a bottle came from pine trees or some aspect of the pine. I don't know how they get it, but I would guess that they distill it out of the pine or maybe out of the resin. Anyway, so if a person got stung by a wasp, like a red wasp, well, they might look at turpentine. There is a substance that works better than that and probably faster than that for stings. It would be called urea. I will not tell you where that comes from. You have to be really smart and figure out where does urea come from. U-R-E-A. That's a joke. I know you know where that comes from. But there's a terpene that's found in the peel of a lemon called limonene. And you're probably saying to yourself, how does this relate to me? What does this have to do with the quality of the health that I have? Well, what I want you to do is consider this right here. You know that if you had a nice piece of furniture and it was an antique, maybe you got it from your mother's mother and it had real wood, it was beautiful. Well, you know that a lot of the cleaning oils or the oils that would preserve the integrity of the wood and make it keep it looking beautiful and young, well, it will involve lemon oil. Always think that's awesome, but that's really not what we're here to talk about today. One of the primary health benefits of these terpenes, or specifically the molecule called D-limonene, it revolves around some very impressive anti-cancer effects. And in my mind, anything that helps reduce the toxic burden or toxic load in the body, you're helping make sure that your health, you have good health integrity. You don't want your body breaking down prematurely, right? So just think in terms of this this oil that comes from the peel of a lemon called D-limonene. Not only is it helpful in prevention, but maybe even the treatment of cancer also. And so I started looking at the research on this, and let me give you an example right here. And this is not a large study, but just, you know, hear it out and consider it. I'm gonna need to let you decide what you want to do and what you don't want to do. Don't let anybody make the decisions for you. You've got to set your mind that it's up to you. You are your own health advocate. Only you can decide if you're going to take the 25, you know, different prescriptions. Chances are, do you need 25 prescriptions? Well, the answer is no. I've been doing this for 31 years. I don't think I've seen an individual that ever needed 25 different drugs. Now, is that common to find somebody that's on 25? Oh, my goodness, yes. Happens all the time. They might need one. They might need two drugs. But the purpose of a drug, usually, is to be a stopgap to help with the symptoms until you can restore the health of either your heart or your pancreas or your liver or your brain or your blood. Or your kidneys? Yeah, that's what it's for. You know, when drugs were first designed, they weren't meant to be used forever. Oh, no, no, no. Just until you can regain that balance. And if that means you need to take a step back and rest, or change your diet, or maybe stop eating something that's destroying your body, then that's what you do. So I found one study that showed six individuals. Now, the unique aspect of these six individuals that made them different from maybe other people, they had highly advanced cancers. And usually when you have cancer that is advanced to the point of no return, you know, that's not a good place to be in. But if you happen to be a person that has a cancer that's not responding, maybe this can be something that you can consider. So I found this study where there were six individuals with advanced cancers. They were able to halt the progression of their cancer for periods of time ranging from 6 to 12 months, and all they were doing was taking that terpene that's found in the rind or the skin of the lemon or the peel called D-limonene. D-limonene is spelled D-L-I-M-O-N-E. Okay, just in case you want to look it up. So that's what you find. But to me, when I read that, I said, I don't care if it's six people or 25 people. If you've got advanced cancer and you can stop and turn off or halt the progression of a cancer, doesn't that instantly get you to a better place? Well, of course it does. And so if a person tries really hard for 2 months to help their prostate cancer or breast cancer, but they, at the end of 2 months, even though they've tried giving up sugar or maybe doing some different things to help themselves, it can be pretty discouraging when you see that maybe the PSA continues to go up, even despite your best efforts to do what you know. So let's just kind of throw this out there right there. This terpene called D-limonene, remember, God made it. Man is not smart enough to make a lemon. Is it just me? Am I the only one that's just really attracted to lemons? I can have them every day. It never gets old. I kind of like limes, too. In a study conducted at the University of Arizona Cancer Center, there were 43 women. Now, I want you to pay attention to this right here, because this is a little bit different scenario than the previous one about the ones that had the advanced cancer. But still, I like this for a couple of reasons. In this study conducted at the University of Arizona Cancer Center, 43 women that had newly diagnosed operable breast cancer. Did you catch that? Operable. That means they could elect to undergo a lumpectomy or a surgical excision. That's where they just, with great precision, they can go and remove the lump that they think is cancerous. Okay? Now listen to this. Here's a punchline right here. These 43 women in Arizona, they were given 2 grams of D-limonene daily for 2 to 6 weeks before the surgery. If this was COVID-19 season, that would not be 2 to 6 weeks before the surgery. It may be more like, I don't know, 12 to 18 weeks. Everything gets pushed back. And so what they did was, this is very intriguing to me, blood and breast tissue were collected to determine the level of D-limonene and its metabolites, as well as changes in the systemic and the tissue biomarkers for breast cancer risk or carcinogenesis. Okay, interesting. Results showed that D-limonene, it concentrated preferentially in the breast tissue. That's one point that I want you to get onto here. Let that roll around your head for a little while and just consider it. When they would consume 2 grams of D-limonene a day, it just had almost this magical way about it that it would go right to the breast tissue and it would concentrate. Isn't that interesting? It knows exactly where to go and what to do. This can be nothing more than God's great, brilliant plan of creation. Results show that D-limonene concentrated preferentially in the breast tissue, reaching a tissue concentration. The average was 41.3 micrograms per gram of tissue. Don't ask me what that means. I'm just saying they had a way to determine if they gave women D-limonene, would it go to the breast tissue? Okay. Results also showed that the D-limonene supplementation resulted in a 22% reduction in the expression of tumor markers. Remember, this is just 2 to 6 weeks here. You got to remember, folks, it takes time and patience and consistency to get the job done. Specifically, D-limonene, they reduce the expression of breast tumor cyclin D1. That can actually be measured for. If you want your doctor to do exhaustive examination, that can be measured for. Cyclin D1 is one of the most frequently overexpressed proteins and one of the commonly amplified genes in breast cancer. This gene that leads to cyclin D1 formation is an estrogen responsive gene, which I know that you've heard that some women with breast cancer, they're trying to test and see if the cancer is estrogen positive, meaning the more estrogen that we kind of pump into the female body, it's like throwing, you know, fuel on the fire, gas on the fire. Does that make sense? It says here that the overexpression of cyclin D1 incurs in more than half of invasive breast cancers. Okay. So this is a big deal. This is not a small deal. Recent evidence also shows that cyclin D1 interferes with the anti-cancer effects of tamoxifen in estrogen receptor-positive breast cancers, which means this could potentially account for why a woman would have treatment failure with tamoxifen, which means it don't do jack to help the breast cancer. So for obvious reasons, the benefit seen with D-limonene, which that's what we've been talking about, that comes from lemons, in this study should be followed up with women that have breast cancer who are expressing cyclin D1. Given the safety and potential benefit of D-limonene, eating more lemons makes sense in the battle against breast cancer. Alrighty. When I read that, I thought to myself, I'm going to see if I can find a scientific article or a reference point toward that as it relates to men with prostate cancer. I haven't found that yet because I haven't even looked for it, but I thought about it, so I'll kind of put that on my list of what I want to do. You know what? It's good to be curious. I have patients come in all the time, and they literally tell me their doctor becomes livid and chews them out when they try to reference a scientific article, or they bring in papers they've copied from internet articles. There's nothing wrong with that. That means you're trying to help yourself. That should be praised. So if you're a curious person like I am, then I praise you. Keep up the good work. It says the highest content of D-limonene, in case you want to know this information, is found in the lemon peel and also the white, spongy inner parts, Sometimes that's called the pith. That's what I call it, P-I-T-H. If you like to eat citrus, why don't you make it an effort to eat the white part inside the rind? Or if you peel an orange or a tangerine to eat, do not throw that white part away. Eat the white spongy part. That's where you get the D-limonene. It says a typical average-sized lemon has about 300 milligrams of D-limonene. Of course, you know as well as I do, how do you take advantage of a lemon? Well, you squeeze the life out of it into a glass of tea or water, or you make your own Gatorade, whatever you want to do. Of course, lemon juice by itself, you do not just suck that into your mouth so we can dissolve the enamel on your teeth. But if you add it to sparkling mineral water, or maybe you used a smidgen of monk fruit. Now, I may be a little bit different on this topic, so I don't want it to shock or surprise you, but I'm not against the use of raw honey. If you had to choose one substance to impart just a little bit of sweetness to something, if you, you know, wanted or needed that, which it's fun sometimes to have a little bit of something sweet, right? Well, raw honey, the kind when you buy it and try to look through it in the sunlight, it looks like it's dirty and dark. It hasn't been filtered. That's the stuff that you want. That's the good stuff. So maybe I've expressed to you today that you need these terpenes. These terpenes. One of them, the one called D-limonene. I was trying to do a reference and find out, well, what else has terpenes? Well, other citrus fruits do too, so you can bet your bottom dollar you're going to find these in probably oranges. You're going to find them in grapefruit, probably clementines, satsumas, limes. Oh, I love limes. That's one of my favorite parts about getting the right type of food is squeezing lime juice on top of it. But I didn't realize this also, but it's also found in basil. The stuff's in basil. Have you ever been to a Thai restaurant where they serve basil leaves? Maybe these things are good for you. How about that? If you want to join me on the radio this morning and ask a question, I just looked at the clock. I've been doing this for 21 minutes now straight. Unless you want me to go for 21 more minutes talking about something else, like watermelons, which I kind of thought about talking about that, or spinach, then maybe you should give me a call and you can ask me your question. So if you have a question or a comment, please do not hesitate to call me. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Does that sound good? Okay. Now, the last suggestion on lemons. You got two choices. You can get conventionally raised lemons. There's like a high probability they have been sprayed with varying degrees of pesticides, herbicides, and chemicals. And a lot of the chemicals they spray on citrus, they prevent either a fungus from growing, some type of infection that would be part and parcel of the plant, or some bug from eating it. Now, I don't think you want those, so you can always choose organic lemons. Thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate you.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a question for you. Is there a way to reduce the size of benign thyroid nodules?
Well, a lot of times the benign nodules are called cold nodules and they just occur, but let me walk this backward and say it this way. And I hope that what I'm about to say doesn't sound negative, so please don't take it the wrong way. It has nothing to do with you or anybody else, but I think 55% of all people above the age of 70, when they do an autopsy on them, and what that means is after they've deceased, but 55% of all people age 70 and above, when they do an autopsy, they have these cold nodules on their thyroid. That's just my way of saying they're fairly common. Now,
right.
The real point I'm getting to is the thyroid is absolutely the largest gland in the human body and even the female body that produces hormones. It's incredible what it does. It's actually kind of shaped like a shield that what a warrior would carry into battle, but when I think of it that way, that's why they call armor thyroid, maybe armor, because it feeds the shield. But your thyroid, in my mind, is one of the easiest glands to disturb, become toxic, poison, just with the stuff that's found in nature. So these little nodules will form if a person's been in contact with some type of a toxic chemical. Now, I realize what I'm going to say is not going to be really relevant, but in years past, when I've looked at studies on thyroid problems, oh my goodness, when the water is contaminated with toxic chemicals, that's when you have thyroid problems. Does that make sense?
Right.
And so I can't possibly check every chemical water supply, but it would be curious to me if everybody in the family had these nodules on the thyroid. I would start thinking they are in contact with some type of toxic chemical. Where is it coming from? Is it in the water table, the food, where else? But to try to answer your question, let's talk about it this way. Your thyroid is a very unique gland that actually plays a powerful role in making sure that your blood is clean. And I think it does that by the concentration of iodine. So, if there is an insufficiency of this element found in nature called iodine, I think it's more common for these nodules to occur on the thyroid. Does that make sense?
Right.
So we've got too little, too much, I doubt that's going to happen, and we've got the Goldilocks just right. So I want you to consider that maybe iodine could be lacking when it comes to nodule formation. The other two minerals that I want to think of would be zinc and selenium. I could probably throw manganese in there also, but suffice it to say, if there's a nodule, think about iodine first being deficient. The other thing that I think of, a lot of these nodules, they happen because what I would call autoimmune reactions. There's a very common type of autoimmune, well, I shouldn't say very common. Well, no, I'm going to take that back. That it is very common. I hear it and see it all the time. It's called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And in those situations, when somebody eats wheat, like in bread or crackers or noodles or pasta or lemon cake, what they would do is it would cause an autoimmune reaction to where the wheat would settle in the thyroid and the thyroid starts attacking it, so nodules would form that way. If you gave me liberty, I would say those nodules form as an effort by the thyroid to try to contain some toxic metabolite.
So I have Hashimoto's, I take selenium, I have a scrawny neck, so the nodules look big.
Years and years and years ago, when I was reading an article by an endocrinologist, he made a very clear point to me in his book, and he said the highest correlation to thyroid problems in women, and I think in his words he said if I had 100 people sitting in my office and they all had thyroid problems, he said you could bet your bottom dollar 95 of them were going to be women, and maybe just 5 at the most would be men. So there is a connection between the female hormone estrogen and thyroid problems. And so, but what he said was, he said 87% of all the women with thyroid problems, they had one thing in common. So I said to myself, hey Roy, you might want to start getting your highlighter out, paying attention to this, because this might be good information. And so I got my highlighter out, and he said, fluoridated cookware. And I said, fluoridated cookware? What's he talking about? He was talking about any type of cookware that had that, you know, welded plastic anodized coating to keep it from sticking. And so that's going to be, can you name something that would be like nonstick cookware? Could you call it Keflon, Teflon, Cephalon, any of those
right.
Nonsticks? So anytime that a person is using a pan to cook an egg in, or, you know, Italian meatballs, I have no idea why I said Italian. But if you're cooking something in a skillet that's nonstick, then what you're doing is some of those fluoridated chemicals, they are coming right into your body and they go right to the thyroid and they destroy it. Not good. That's why you don't want to use a black plastic spatula or a black plastic spoon, because they put fire retardant chemicals in there.
Huh.
You know where else this stuff is? It's in microwave popcorn. They have to put all that fire retardant chemicals up against the paper. So what do you think happens when you start popping the corn? Do you think maybe some of that chemical leaches onto the corn, and when you eat it, you're going, great, I'm poisoning my thyroid?
Well, I don't eat that, but I do use the black plastic utensils all the time. And I don't eat wheat, so it's not a wheat issue.
Well, you know what? The other thing that I would kind of work this angle and just, you're going to give me liberty here, aren't you, to just go off on a tangent?
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Sure.
I would say, as a general rule, probably 95% of what goes on in a woman's thyroid has to do with how mentally, emotionally, physically stressed that she's under. Which I realize this is probably just falling on deaf ears, because you've probably never experienced any stress on any level, from any angle.
Ha ha.
All your family is perfect. No one ever brings any stress. No, I'm teasing about that. Every human being is going to face a difficulty, right?
Absolutely.
And so this is my simple way of saying it. If you tell me that you're in a real happy place and you feel calm and joyous and relaxed, I would say, hey, that's pretty good. You probably don't have too much cortisol, which is a hormone or a chemical that your body produces in response to stress. But if you told me that you're jittery on the inside, or you're nervous, or maybe you don't feel your best emotionally, that might be a clue there's too much cortisol. And the other reason I'm saying this is cortisol starts to break down the tissue of the thyroid. And so maybe where I'm going with this is, it is incompatible to have a really, really healthy thyroid and be under just severe mental, emotional stress at the same time. I know I'm kind of giving you extremes right here, but you get the gist of it, don't you?
Right.
And so in order to try to remedy this, one of the things is we got to find, what are we going to do to manage stress better? And, you know, there are some people, when they go through a lot of stress, they eventually get to the point where they say, hey, I'm no longer going to be concerned about what somebody else thinks about me or what they say. It's just, I'm the heck with it. I'm not doing that any longer. Because, you know, stress is so hard on the body. And I think without even realizing it, we can be under stress. Now, the article that I was reading before I came on the radio, but I still think this is relevant to the question that you're asking. I was looking at a study from 1953, and I want to say the guy's name is Dr. Willis from Canada. Now, I need you to give me some, you know, leeway here, because he's Canadian. Does that change how you feel about that?
I'm good with that.
Well, I know, but for all I know, you may not trust northern people that are from, like, New York City. Or do you?
I'm from New York.
I think I said that wrong. Can I retract that? No, you know I'm only joking about that. But what Dr. Willis said is, vitamin C is absolutely one of the most critical electron donors in the human body, because what it does is it helps negate or discharge, remove free radicals. Those are damaging hormone. Those are damaging substances to the thyroid. But he said everything's good until a woman is under emotional stress. That will deplete her vitamin C levels almost faster than anything. And I kind of thought about this, and I said, okay, what is he saying? He's saying that you are most vulnerable to having a gland like the thyroid break down when you're under mental stress, because it just rapidly depletes the vitamin C that you have and you're available to help keep you in good working order. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I like studies from Canada. I was only joking about that. I'm going to have 25 people complain. He doesn't like Canadians. No, there's a woman that listens every Saturday morning, and she takes absolutely better notes than I would ever be capable of, and she's from Canada. So, and they're so sweet, too. But to make a long story short, you just take a step back and say, okay, what's at play here? If you feel routinely on the inside like you might be just a little... And these are just my words, so you can fill in the blank however you want. If you routinely feel uneasy on the inside, you don't know what I'm doing, but I'm kind of tapping to my breastbone, you know, like Tarzan would beat his chest.
Right.
I'm not Tarzan.
Are you wishing?
No, because I'm deathly afraid of chimpanzees. Those suckers will rip your arms off and beat you to death with them. They're so... Anyway, I didn't tell you about the time I went to the zoo when I was in the fourth grade, did I?
No.
The monkey reached through the cage, and he, like he was going to hold his hand out to me, like he wanted to shake hands. And the monkey couldn't have been more than, I don't know, 7 pounds? I thought, oh my goodness, Roy, this is so touching. The primate wants to reach out and touch my hand. I love monkeys. I gave him my hand. He nearly ripped my head off as I pulled me into the bars of the cage. I thought, how could an animal
really?
Be? Yes, he was like so stinking strong. It was unbelievable. So, yes, I confess,
wow.
I do not trust a 7-pound primate. So if you double that to 14, I really don't trust him. But anyway, where was I going with this? But you've got to have vitamin C to help your body deal with stress. You just have to. If you don't have vitamin C, you're just allowing your body to break down. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you've mentioned 5 different items as far as iodine, zinc, selenium, possibly manganese, and vitamin C. Just totally off the top of your head, is there a ballpark amount that could be beneficial to try to make sure you get?
Well,
to
answer that question, let me float an idea your direction or some research. If you were to ask me where do the longest-lived, healthiest people live on the planet right now, I'd probably say, why don't we go to Okinawa, Japan? Or at least it used to be that way. Now, if they have a fast food restaurant in every corner and they eat junk food, then all bets are off. You know that. So
right.
And so they live longer than anybody else. They have more centenarians. But if you look at what their intake of iodine is, because they're eating delicious octopus and squid, so I'm certain that probably where you live, you could go fishing this afternoon and pull up an octopus. How did you know that?
Wow, that's pretty good.
It was just another wild guess, kind of like the Canadian New York City deal. I just kind of fall into those deals. But when you eat bounty from the ocean, whether it's deep ocean fish, of course, in my mind, I'd say, hey, I'd like some Alaskan halibut. When's the last time you've had halibut?
I've never had it.
Oh, my goodness, it's so good. That stuff is like eating candy. Well, it's not really sweet, but it's good. It tastes really, really good. It's not cheap, though.
I wouldn't think so.
When you eat fish that's caught in relatively clean water, that's going to be a very significant source of iodine. So the people on the island of Okinawa, and if I don't get the numbers exactly right, but I'm going to say they average around 12.5 milligrams of iodine a day. Now, that is a freakishly high amount compared to what the average American gets. And so, just if I can work a different angle here, if a woman did not have enough iodine, that would predispose her to a swollen thyroid where the thyroid enlarges. Sometimes it's called a goiter. Now, I'm sure or certain that you do not have a goiter the size of a volleyball.
I don't. I'm thankful for that.
Are you familiar with how big a volleyball is?
Yes.
Have you ever had a child play basketball or volleyball?
Both, yes.
Now, I need to ask you a personal question. Does this child have a killer instinct when it comes to playing volleyball? I mean, would she just literally destroy an opponent if it's in front of her?
Yes.
Oh, great. Does she have like a mean streak occasionally?
Just a highly competitive streak.
She must be listening right now. I like the way that you tactically worded that. And so if a woman is lacking iodine, she's going to be more prone to the thyroid swelling or enlarging. And that would be called a goiter, which today, under modern circumstances, probably 95% of all goiters, they probably have an autoimmune component. The supplement is called Thytrophin PMG, or at least that would be one that you could consider to trying to help with that. But maybe the way that I phrased everything this way this morning is because you got to come to terms with how you feel, and you're trying to figure this out, and you're trying to help yourself, right?
Right.
Aha, that means I'm giving you an A-plus on your report card today for effort. That's good.
Ooh, very good.
But if you do have continual ongoing stress that you don't like, then that's got to be one thing that we've got to find a way to navigate through where you don't feel that way.
Right.
Does that make sense?
I don't think I'm a high stress person. Everybody has stress at different times in their life, but I don't think I'm a super high stress person.
Okay. Well, I would say walking every day would be critically important to a nodule on the thyroid, because what you're doing is you're trying to get more blood flow and more passes of blood through the thyroid. And my opinion is that the blood is a very sophisticated, complex organ system. That's just my own unique category. I think it's a unique entity. And so the more that blood is able to travel through your thyroid, and you accomplish that by, you know, lots of walking, for example. Walking is called putting one foot in front of the, never mind. And so when you do that, you're helping yourself. But I would say one of the things you're looking at is detoxification. Now, not that long ago, I was reading about a very toxic element that disrupts the human or the female body. It's called mercury. Now, we don't really have mercury in thermometers anymore for sale, but it used to be that I would play with mercury from a thermostat when I was a kid. Cool stuff. It's just very toxic. But
right.
But in this article, they were experimenting with what agents do we have to give someone to help them detoxify. Now, I may not go into all of them. Actually, I'm not going to go into any of them, but what they came up with is that when a person exposed their body to the energy of an infrared sauna, all of a sudden the body was able, under those circumstances, to start expelling mercury and toxins at a very high rate of speed. And so, to me, that could be a very beneficial thing to consider, is the use of an infrared sauna, whether it's a portable one or one that's, you know, made in a wooden box. Or made in a wooden box. You know what I meant. It wooden box. I don't know. You might want to make one out of a wooden box and try that. That sounds like something they would do to you if you misbehaved in prison. Into the box you're going. You've been bad. That's not what I mean. But the infrared is a wavelength of light that when it penetrates, it activates enzymes that encourage the body to heal. One of those, I'm sorry, genes. Did I say enzymes? I'm in a gene expression.
That's okay.
You mean I've only made 12 mistakes so far this morning?
No, I was just going with you.
But is,
what
well,
did
it,
I know?
It's called the FOXO3 gene expression. And that's one thing that the infrared sauna has been shown to do extremely well, is it helps to stimulate a better expression or efficiency of that FOXO3 gene. And all of a sudden, things start working really, really well. And you may have heard me say in the past that in that study that was done a little over 2 years ago from Finland, men that used saunas the most, they didn't have any dementia or Alzheimer's over a 20-year period. And the age to start off was 55. I know you don't know anybody that's 55, because I'm good at judging ages, and I'm guessing your age is 23. Is that pretty close? How close am I?
It's so you are so close.
It'd be splitting hairs to tell the true age, wouldn't it?
It would. It would.
But but to be in the study, you had to be at least 55 years of age to 70, and they followed these men for 20 years, and those that never used an infrared sauna, they statistically had all the Alzheimer's and dementia compared to the men that used it the most. And when I looked up the study, I'm almost positive it was men that used the sauna 4 times a week, but you got to remember, this is Finland. I think part of Finland is like sticking into the Arctic Circle somewhere, so it's probably you're probably thinking, okay, 30 below zero would be getting warm,
right?
Feel good. Yes, I'll do the sauna.
Uh-huh.
But there is a tremendous healing property from that spectrum, that invisible spectrum of light called the infrared. And I just think it's phenomenal. So at least just prayerfully consider that. See what you come up with.
Okay. All righty, very good. Any thoughts for like the amount of zinc, selenium, potentially manganese?
I think you get manganese when you put black pepper on your food. Selenium, it's going to usually be somewhere between maybe 200 to 300 micrograms a day. You get those from Brazil nuts, if you like Brazil nuts.
No, I like pills.
You are one evil woman suggesting that you don't like nuts.
Supplements. I've tried Brazil nuts. Those, I can't do it. But I can swallow selenium.
Okay, no, and that's what you would do, is you would swallow a selenium, but somewhere between 200 to 300 micrograms of selenium should get the job done. Does that sound fair?
Yeah.
And then the zinc, yeah. I say if you've got a problem, you need to probably work 30 milligrams of zinc a day. And you know what? None of these things I've told you can do anything to harm you or hurt you. They can only help your body regain its balance, which we got the long play here. You plan on living just a few more years longer than 23 years of age, correct?
I truly want to.
And you do have a very, very bright future ahead of you, right?
As far as I know.
Then that means we want to make sure that your body serves you very well. It doesn't break down prematurely. And so in order to do that, if we could tackle these things. Now, I know you know what I was saying, but just to be redundant in case somebody else listening doesn't, don't use non-stick cookware. Don't do it.
Do you know, I'm headed to the store today, and I usually use stainless steel, but not my utensils. I do use the plastic, but I'm going to buy, I guess you buy stainless steel utensils. I don't know. What else would you use if you don't use plastic?
Well, I've seen the ones made out of wood.
Oh.
I think that's what Fred and Wilma Flintstone used to use.
I mean, I use wooden spoons, but I mean like spatulas.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm sorry. You did say that. Sorry. I was off in...
So, I mean, I don't know. I guess they have... I'll be looking for those today.
So. Okay. Well, I think if you go with stainless steel, that's going to be very, very good, and that's a move in the right direction, so way to go.
All right, very good. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
I appreciate your
You're
help.
Welcome.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.
I hope there was enough information for other people listening, but if you'd like to join me on the radio right now and ask a question, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Hello, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to the program. All right. That did not work out, but that's fine. There's a phone line open if you want to call and ask a question, especially as it relates to health. Really, really good. 903-586-5257. Okay, did I get you on the air now?
Yes, but I'm the different caller.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yes,
glad to have you. Thanks for your phone call.
Well, thank you. I've been listening to your program for many years, and actually I met you several years ago, paid a visit to you, to your office. But I know you don't have much time. Could you speak to psoriasis or those kinds of conditions, eczema, nutritionally, what can be done to assist in that arena?
You betcha. Did you want to hang up and just let me have a go at it?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good deal. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, your skin is one of the truest reflectors of what's going on internally. And so if you have a chronic skin problem, you got to train your mind to say, what is going on inside? And so just very briefly, you have your liver, you have your kidneys. They're very specialized, unique individual filtration or detoxification systems. I remember reading in a textbook, of course, I dig this information, that 100 years ago, doctors would call your skin your third kidney. And you know on some level this is true because you've seen a man before at the store wearing a white t-shirt and he had the most yellow stains you know, in certain areas like the armpit or around the collar. Well, you've heard me say before, what is the difference between urine and sweat? Well, there's not a lot of difference, other than maybe the urine is just a little bit more concentrated than your sweat is. Anyway, so if a person has psoriasis, that has got to be one of the most common forms of what I would call an autoimmune disease. Autoimmune means basically that your immune system is starting to produce antibodies against a substance, and then that substance settles near the skin, and that's where the battle takes place. So that's where you have all the horrible debris field and the scaly red layers of dead decomposing tissue that builds up called psoriasis. So I'm going to cut to the chase and say it this way with psoriasis. Okay. Let's just say that for breakfast today, you have two pieces of toast with butter on them. I think butter's great. You're not going to have me denigrate butter. I'm not going to happen. It's good for you. You have two eggs. You have your honey bun. You have a bowl of fruit, something like that. Okay. What would happen if, without you realizing what's going on, that the lining of your gut had become very thin and very weak? Now, the reason I'm going this direction is, under normal circumstances, you've got to be able to produce sufficient amounts of digestive enzymes and, you know, strong acid in your stomach to be able to start breaking down the foods that are in front of you. And when you can break these things down, then you can start extracting the goodness from the food, and that could be protein, or that could be fat or carbohydrates, vitamins and minerals. I think you get the gist of it. Now, your small intestine, this is where all the absorption of the good things take place. You've got to have a small intestine if you're going to extract the goodness from your food. So under normal circumstances, only the good things that you need pass through the lining of the gut, meaning the small intestine. But if there's anything that's bad or toxic, let's just say you have a food that's got like red dye in it. Well, how is red dye good for the immune system or for your brain? It ain't. And so that should be kept in the gut where it can attach to fiber and bile acids and form a bowel movement so it can pass out. That's how you detoxify. But if somebody has what's called a hyperpermeable gut, or maybe even it's called leaky gut. I don't know, have you ever heard the term leaky gut syndrome? But if you have a leaky gut, what happens is everything changes. Your gut starts leaking proteins and waste from the gut into the bloodstream. That ain't good. And so let me give you a scenario. Let's just say that toast that you consumed contained a protein called gliadin, or actually I should have said gluten. If this gluten is not broken down and digested properly, and it passes from the lining of the gut through it because it's broken down into the bloodstream, then your immune system says, oh my goodness, what is this undigested foreign protein doing here? And so it has one play, or it has a common play, that is to produce antibodies against the gluten. And this is a little bit of a mystery, but this is what happens. And so if that undigested protein from wheat settles in around your elbow or your knee or the palms of your hands or your scalp, well, your body's going to say, hey, this is a foreign protein. You do not belong here. And so your body starts to try to break it down and get rid of it, but it uses chemical warfare to do it. So it's almost as if your body's attacking you, when what it's really trying to do is it's trying to get rid of the wheat protein. Now, this is my opinion right here. It can be questioned forwards and backwards. But I see such a high correlation to an intolerance to wheat when it comes to psoriasis. So how should we do this? Well, number one, you might want to come to terms that there's something that's a trigger. And so in your situation, if you've got psoriasis or a loved one does, it may be that if they stop eating wheat, the psoriasis literally could start to disappear and go away. I've seen that hundreds of times over the last 30 years. And so you got to remember, when there's something on the skin that doesn't go away, it's either because of a deficiency, meaning you're lacking something, or it's an excess. You're getting too much of a substance. Does that make sense? And so the sooner that we figure out what that is, the better this is going to be. But what can you do to help yourself? Well, what if you started just eating clean foods? I think I could probably build a case. If you could find clean meat and clean vegetables and fruit, and if you tried to experiment just laying off of grains, which in some people tend to be really hard to digest, you might all of a sudden see your skin become gorgeous and beautiful again. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Dr. Morgan. This is your long-lost friend from Pasadena.
You mean the Alaskan kid?
Yes, sir.
You thought I was going to say the Pasadena kid.
When you were talking about how I bit my tongue, but I thought, no, he'll forgive me. I thought I'd just call for the halibut.
Wait, was that trying to...
I recommend halibut straightforward, and that's, I thought, I've heard that before. Do I take a chance of offending somebody by saying that?
No, that was very funny. Actually, I had some halibut this week, and I'm telling you, it is just literally the most delicious fish of all time. Do you agree?
Yes, sir. I was working on the Exxon Valdez oil spill one time, and a guy was too tired to process the halibut he had just caught. And he gave it to us. We took it back to the Nazarene church where we were staying while we were working on the oil spill. And boy, that was the most tasty fish I've ever had.
Oh, my goodness. I never thought I would find something positive to say about a human being exhausted and too tired and worn out. But all of a sudden, now I know. If you happen to be in contact with a guy that catches a halibut and he's too tired, that's good.
Right. One quick question, see if you can answer it. I thought I was pretty smart. I got one of those Dash's air fryers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Well, after listening to you today, are they safe because of the coating?
Well, I want you to know, they make those that have stainless steel baskets. And those are ones I like to go for, because if it's stainless steel, that's going to be good. It's not going to be coated with that Teflon stuff.
Would that mean it'll be shiny instead of black?
Yeah, exactly. So I got to give you an option here. Either you find a little bitty stainless steel basket that fits inside of it. Mm-hmm. So if you can do that, then you're clear. Clearer, but they do make those air fryers that have stainless steel cages. I don't know why I said cages. You know what I mean? Just something to hold your food right there. So if you had sweet potato fries, the stainless steel basket would hold it, and it wouldn't even come in contact with the Teflon.
Okay, I'm going to start looking for one.
Yeah, they got them. I think you could probably buy one easily for like 50 or 60 bucks.
I'm going to look for it.
And so, since you're a multi-zillionaire, money is no object.
Yeah, right.
Am I right about that?
Well, if you grade me on a curve, I guess I could say so.
Hey, I appreciate your phone call today.
Thank you, Dr.
Good to
Morgan.
Hear from you. Yeah, take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I really believe that air fryers are like one of the greatest cooking inventions of all time. There's some people that have such a small kitchen or a small space. You could cook just about anything in those, and you don't have to use, well, it doesn't have to be all oily. I just think they're phenomenal. But yes, they do make air fryers that have, I've seen them that have multiple shelves in them. I don't really remember a brand name off the top of my head, but if you typed in, like on Amazon or eBay or Google, air fryer, they have different baskets. I mean, you could literally cook almost any type of meat that you could think of. Now, yes, you cannot crack an egg open on a basket with a, you know, little square grids. It'd probably go right through it and mess it up. But you know what I mean? If it was a fish filet, a chicken filet, something like that. Anyway, we are completely out of time. It's been so good being with you today. May God bless you, and I hope you have a great weekend.